The views and opinions of this podcast are solely those of the creators and do not reflect any streaming service or platform. This podcast contains strong language and contrarian viewpoints that may be objectionable to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
And welcome to Three Geeks in a Microphone podcast. I'm Dean.
I'm Art.
I'm Russ.
And today we're going to be discussing how we all got into geekdom. How when the three of us realized, yes, we're geeks and there's no going back. So some of my earliest memory. What about you guys? What's your earliest geeky memory, guys?
You mean like when you realized I started collecting toys? When I was 14, just barely 14, I went from being a kid that loved toys to maybe a year or two of collecting baseball cards and trying to be more adulty hobby or something. I don't know what you want to call it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, hey, I want Star Wars figures. And then poof, and it's been my life since. So
nothing wrong with that.
For me, I'd have to say it started when I'd have to say it was Star Trek IV when it came out in 1986, The Voyage Home.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had a bathrobe that was like the monster maroon color.
Okay.
And it actually looked like that jacket that Kirk wears throughout most of the film. So I hacked off the bottom of the bathrobe and tried to wear it to school with a dress shirt underneath and a pair of black, like, church pants.
That's cool.
I'm disturbing. I'm just kidding. That's awesome.
I don't know. I mean, I was always geeky. I was always, you know, into sci-fi computers. I've always been into computers even since I was a kid. It just outgrew when I was a child. I mean, I can remember, and you'll hear me say this a lot over the course of this podcast. When I was a kid, I spent a lot of time at my aunt and uncle's. I would go over there and watch the original Star Wars on beta over and over again. And it kind of started from there. I mean, most of my childhood toys were Star Wars toys. But yeah, I had a ton of other stuff too. But the bulk was always Star Wars. And as I got older, I was a gamer. I, you know, role-playing games. We played everything from D&D to Palladium Fantasy to Vampires in high school. I still play to this day. I have a gaming group, and we play twice or once a month. So I guess I've always been a geek.
Yeah, that's pretty much how. Same. You know, it's just never really, as a kid, I knew all the Star Wars characters before I saw any of the movies. I was your typical little boy that had the Hot Wheels and all those die-cast cars, and I always wanted Star Wars action figures even before seeing the movie, and then G.I. Joe figures came out. I loved the comics. I didn't really get to read a whole lot of them, but the cartoons, everything. And I had older siblings. I'm not sure your age range, if you have siblings, you two.
I have younger siblings. I'm actually the oldest.
And then, Dean, you?
I have a half-brother I've never met, but for the most part, I was an only child. Except for maybe if you want to count my cousin, he was born in 80, so there was like a four-year difference between him and I, so we kind of grew up together. He's like my little brother.
Okay. You see, with me, my brother was 15 years older, my sister's 12 years older, and my other sister's 7 years older. I was a mix of having four older siblings and an only child, because there was so much age difference that there's a lot of times I was exposed to all this stuff through my brother and my sisters. As a kid, I knew Star Wars. In fact, I vaguely remember the Star Wars holiday special. I would have been right about 2 years old when that hit. And it's more of a not seeing it, but remembering all the excitement from my brother and my sisters of getting to watch Star Wars on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've just, that's all I really remember. And then I think I remember seeing the creepy little child Wookiee. What's his name? Lumpy?
Lumpy. Mm-hmm. So let's break it down and give our ages. I'm 44. I'll be 45 in April. I was born in 76.
I was born in 78. So, and I'll be 43 in February.
And I just turned 44, November of 76 when I was born. I like to tell everyone I was 6 months old when Star Wars hit theater.
Nice. So, I mean, I was too young to see, like, Star Wars in theaters. Granted, I would have been, you know, I didn't see, my dog says hello. I didn't see Empire in the theaters, but my mom did take me to see Jedi. That's something that's I will always remember. Like, I did see Jedi in a theater.
That's about identical to my story. I besides the Star Wars holiday special, which I don't remember seeing, I just remember the hype. I was too young. I was like, the Star Wars, I was too young. I had the storybook, the pictures, so I had a vague idea. Empire, I didn't see. And then Return of the Jedi came out, and my mom took me to see that. And she, till the day she died, would laugh every time she see Bib Fortuna, because I guess when I saw him come out on the screen and he's all T-Lugga-Lugga, I gasp. I'm like, because he was so freaky looking in comparison to movies and stuff that I'd seen. And so she'd almost taunt me with him.
I mean, like, one of my, like, I can remember in the summer of 84, my mom took me to see Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. That's another one of my clear memories of my mom taking me to the old AMC theater, just her and I, and we went and saw Temple of Doom, because Raiders was one of my favorite movies. Again, my aunt had Raiders on beta, and I watched it so much that tape got destroyed. Has anyone here ever been made fun of or picked on when we were younger for being geeks?
So, like I said, I started collecting toys when I was in the eighth grade, roughly. You know, it was 1991. Speaking of, it was 1991, and it's probably like my 30-year anniversary of being a full-blown toy collector right now as we speak. Because I remember going to my first flea market, like the first weekend in January of 1991, looking for Star Wars action figures. But I bought some figures from like this kid that sister was in my class, and she would be like, oh my gosh, that guy bought action figures for my brother. It's like he's still a kid or something, you know, just stupid. And I still was like, well, who's laughing now, biatch? Now it's cool. Look at all the stuff I have. And what do you have? Nothing. A failed relationship and kids that hate you.
Damn.
And you're Karen on Facebook. No, I don't know. I haven't seen her in years. But I'm just, but yeah, for the most part, because growing in my high school years, I was a loner. I didn't do sports. I didn't go to dances. I didn't like people. I just had my hobby and a couple good friends. And so I got kind of, you know, it wasn't known enough to really get picked on too much. But when they find out, the occasional rude remark, well, I was also known as a nice guy. So a lot of people left me alone. And it didn't hurt that I was taller than most people.
Right.
Given I was a beanpole back then. The me today is about three times the size of the high school me, and I totally, yeah.
You can. What about you, Art?
Oh yeah. Well, early on, I went to a private Lutheran school, and I ended up becoming best friends. In fact, to this day, with Robert Eichmann, he and I met in like the second grade, and we were just equally geeks, like both of us into Star Trek. Star Wars. We were reading the books back then. I was really, for whatever reason, into the Jaws books. And I had all of those, like from the first movie, the second movie, and then the fourth movie. They never made one that I know of for the third movie. But him and I would trade books and stuff. But yeah, we got made fun of on the playground. Some of the bigger kids would mess with him. He would not fight back or even really defend himself because his dad was a pastor. So I did a lot of the fighting for him. And usually kids would leave us alone after that for a while. And it was like they learned their lesson. Then like a month or two later, some other idiot would be over there pulling our hair or something stupid. But private Lutheran schools here in Fort Wayne, I mean, I'm sure they're like this everywhere. There were a lot of like uppity, like rich kids. And even though my dad made as much money as they did, or as their dads did, and then at times more, you know, we were kind of looked down on because we were geeks, you know. And it, by the time high school got around, I'd pretty much mellowed it out. I mean, I was pretty much a closet geek. I mean, for the most part, nobody really knew. And by that point, I had spent a lot of my time trying, like I would watch movies and shows and try to reproduce what I saw on the show or make like real items like the pads from the Next Generation or like the proton pack. And you guys have probably heard me tell this story a dozen times. You know, I took my G.I. Joe Mean Dog box, and that was actually my first proton pack. I covered it with black poster board. And started actually making, took apart some like Constructs light kits and to add lights to it. And actually, Michael French has it now.
Okay.
But that was really kind of more my, that ended up becoming more my thing would be like, you know, my friend Robert and I would watch shows and stuff. And then I would try to figure out ways of making that technology real or making a prop that had a real world function.
When I was in like, even back as far as elementary school, I mean, I was picked on as a kid. You know, I walked funny, you know. Yeah, it is what it is. And then when I got to high school, I was pretty much the smart, quiet kid. When I got to high school, I had a close, tight-knit circle of friends. A couple of them I'm still friends with today. But the one common thread between all of us is we were all gamers. We all, you know, play D&D and whatnot. And then when we all got together, I realized we're all geeks. I mean, we were all into the same movies, you know, Star Wars. I was more heavily into the 80s shows even back then than some of my other friends were. And the thing that really changed me was in the mid-90s when we first got our first cable modem, our first real internet connection. The first thing I did was I started, you know, looking up 80s sites, and it just a memory flood. And then when they first started off, I discovered Retro Blasting, Michael French's site. He's doing all this cool stuff with toys, and then I started remembering my toys. And what happened with me is when I was a kid, well, back in high school, my mom and my grandma, we all went out to California for like 2 months to see family. Well, I had taken all of my remaining toys, everything I had, and I put them in like four large boxes. I wasn't collecting or anything at the time. And I just wanted to hang on to them. And I put them in the garage. So we went out to California. And then when we came back, the garage door was open and half the stuff in our garage was gone, including all of my childhood toys. Once I found Retro Blasting, I reached out to Michael. And he's kind of the one that got me into collecting, because I really never had thought about it. And then once I started, it's like a drug. I kind of started from there. What I did was, he probably gave me the best advice anyone's ever given me as far as collecting goes. He told me, be honest with yourself and make a list of every toy that you had, and then augment that list with stuff that you always wanted but you never got. So that's what I did. And now when I go toy hunting, that's the list I go off of. But yeah, I was picked on myself when, especially in high school. I mean, I got detention one day, and I'm sitting there reading a riffs book. Back up for a minute. I didn't do a lot of sports. I played golf. I was a drama nerd. I was in the school plays and stuff like that. But I lifted weights. I mean, I had all these football players and whatnot, you know. And here I am, this geeky dude just lift, me and my buddy would lift just because we could. It was like the end of the year. I was in, I think it was health class, and I'm sitting there reading a Rips book, and these two jock assholes are in the front arm wrestling. And our teacher had happened to be the football coach. And he looks at me and he says, "Hey, Dean, why don't you give him a try?" Okay. So I beat both of them. And the look of shock on their face that I beat them, they're like, how did you do that? And my teacher looked at him and said, "He's in the weight room every morning. Where the hell are you guys?" For the most part, though, everyone, I knew everyone. Everyone from the jocks to the geeks. And I was friends with everyone. So I kind of got, that's kind of the way I got through high school. But yeah, I was picked on a little. Okay, guys, what's our geekiest habit?
Well, let's see. Geekiest habit. I don't know. Everything is so normal to me. It's like, what's geeky and what's not? But, you know, just some different stories of my past. I remember there was a time that I was at a flea market and this actually very attractive gal about my age, you know, was talking with me, and I chatted with her, and then I like took off and kind of just left her high and dry, not realizing that she actually was probably interested in getting to know me. And it's because I saw a basket of vintage Star Wars figure at a new person's table, and I had to rush over and see if they had anything that I needed. So I was kind of like, huh, there goes that possible love connection.
Art, what about you? What's your biggest geeky habit?
Oh, God, I don't even know where to start. I mean, you've been to my house. It's kind of a toss-up between collecting things and building things. You know, I'm constantly building or designing things or improving different things. Or, you know, I think I was like one of the first people that got a stapled and phaser kit and made it wirelessly charged. Same with the stapled and tricorders, the tricorder kits. And I've been posting stuff online about how to make them wirelessly charged. Now almost everybody on the Star Trek builders or prop builders group is doing it.
Nice. I don't know if you'd call this geeky, but I'm kind of obsessed with the 1980s. My biggest thing, and it's probably odd, I watch a lot of commercials.
I
found a couple YouTube channels that's all they do are collections of commercials from various years, and it's amazing the memory flood from commercials, and it gives an interesting snapshot of the year or the decade that they came out in, because you don't see commercials like this anymore.
Yeah, I do the same thing with old shows. Like I'll watch them and notice. That's one of my favorite things to do. Like, even vintage, like 1960s shows, they're like time capsules. You look around, I mean, you don't see some of the items that are commonplace, everyday items in those shows anymore. You know, you don't see rotary phones anymore. You don't see phones hanging on the walls. You don't see answering machines anymore or ashtrays everywhere. You don't see somebody walk into a Burger King and there's ashtrays on the table anymore.
Right.
I mean, there's all kinds of stuff you just don't see anymore.
That's one of the things I love doing, because I love photography. I dabble in it, and I love looking at historic photos. But seeing some of those little lost treasures like that, well, yeah, I guess they're treasures to us because of the history behind it. But seeing an ashtray on a restaurant table is so nostalgia, you know, it's weird that something like that can actually mean so much to someone, but it does.
Right.
Yeah. Apparently people are collecting the old like McDonald's ashtrays now.
Yep, they are. And the other thing I noticed, I can always tell like a period piece, especially a show or a movie that's set in the 80s. The thing I love to see about it is how much care and time was done in the set design. Like, say what you want about the show, but like the first season of Stranger Things, they took a long time to make sure the sets and everything were correct.
But they used a Power of the Force 2 Millennium yes. Falcon.
Yes, yeah. I noticed that. I noticed that the first time I saw it.
I know. I was like, but the fact that they dropped it, I'm like, okay, thank you.
No, it's like, if you look at the stuff in the background, like the shag carpeting and the wood paneling for the den, you know, the
basement couch.
Right. It's the stuff they get right. Or I don't know if you guys ever watched Manhunter. No, I'm sorry, Mindhunter when it was on. But that show was, it jumped decades. It started in like the late 60s, early 70s. And before the show was canceled, it went on in the 80s, early 80s, well, late 70s. Anyways, but the amount of care they did in the sets blew my mind. I mean, at one point, one of the FBI agents and his wife, they go out to dinner at a steakhouse. You don't see this anymore. I mean, it had all the wood paneling, and they literally could have taken that set from like a steakhouse from 1975 and moved the actors and filmed there, and you couldn't have told the difference. It was that good. Even the cars and the down to like the ink pens they were using were all from the 70s. And I kind of like that when a show takes that much time and detail to get the period right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like seeing, too, like, when they get, like, certain, like, pop culture things right, too. Like, if you look around, like, the kitchen sometimes, you'll actually, like, remember women used to have, like, Tupperware parties.
Mm-hmm.
I know my mom had probably four or five of them, or Avon parties, and you'd see, like, those like, late 70s puke green Tupperware containers that were, like flour containers and sugar containers and stuff, and if you, you know... Or seeing that orange formica that was everywhere in the early 80s.
Right.
Early and mid 80s.
That's in my kitchen now.
Yeah.
Growing, I lived with my mom and my grandma growing up. It was my grandma's place. Interestingly, my house didn't always have that 80s aesthetic. It had a mix of everything from like, you know, the 50s all the way up at the time through the 80s. Like when we got a new couch, it was pure 80s because that's when it was bought. My grandma traveled all over the world, and I lived in a museum as a kid. Awesome. I mean, she had stuff from all over the world, but she never got rid of anything. You know, obviously World War II, was lived through the Depression. Like my pots and pans are my grandparents, and they were probably bought in the late 50s, and I still have them to this day.
That, dude, we have so much in common because my parents are, you know, their dad's still alive. He's 84, but there's a lot of kitchen utensils that, and I live here with dad, that they got for wedding gifts that I'm still using. And they got married in 1960. But yeah, our house was built in 79, and it's we got red carpeting, we got the orange formica, dark wood kitchen cabinets. So this house is very much like what you're talking about, a little bit of a museum, because there's things that they've accumulated over their life, things that were handed down from my grandparents. I have a lamp that's from the 30s in our front living room. You know, it's just weird. I love it, but...
Oh, no, I get you. I mean, I have... My grandparents' house was built in 55, and we lived there till early 2000s, I guess. Some of the stuff I had when we moved, it was insane because, you know, it was 40, 50 some years of stuff in that house. I mean, and I still have a lot of it. I mean, I have photographs of my great, great, great grandparents going back to like the 1800s. Hell, I even have the discharge papers of, I think it's my great, 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 great grandfather from the Civil War.
Nice.
Art, what about you? I mean...
Yeah, I've got some things that were like my parents' and grandparents' stuff. Like I've got, oddly enough, in the kitchen, I've got this like orange, 70s orange soup ladle that was my parents', and they got it as a wedding present. My parents actually are kind of younger. Like, you know, my parents were married in 74, and I attribute part of that to... Nobody could have put up with my dad's shit when he first got back. You know, from Vietnam, there was just no putting up with his shit. Yeah, I mean, I've got some things. Most of it was my dad's dad's. And a lot of it, like even what my Stella guitar is pre-World War II.
Nice.
But as far as like my house, I mean, the house I grew up in, the one back room, like the family room was pure 80s. Then the living room at the front of the house looked like it stepped right off the set of Miami Vice. I mean, we had like those plush, like white couches. They weren't even like really, they were kind of like a cream color with gray threads through them. Kind of very Miami Vice looking furniture in that, for whatever reason, in that front room. I mean, or it, you know, it could have like come off the set of Star Trek The Next Generation in the early seasons. You know, it looked like something like your grandparents had gone from the 60s and suddenly realized they were in the 80s and they just had to go through and like replace everything. You know, like it came right off the set of some 80s show.
Like growing up in the, especially when I was a kid in the 80s, like in the living room, we had the, you know, the gold shag carpet, you know, and then when my grandma got a new couch, she got like this greenish, whitish sectional that just screamed 80s, but it didn't exactly go with the carpeting, you know? So it was always a weird mix.
The last house that my family lived in before I left for the Navy and my parents got divorced, my bedroom actually had green shag carpet in it.
Nice.
Because that house was actually built in the 60s. But like the living room and the family room, the front family or the living room, my parents had recarpeted almost right after we moved in. It had like white carpet in it. The back room had original carpet in it. And it was like shit brown. You could tell it had been shag at one point, but the people that owned the house before us had dogs, and so did we, so it was pretty trampled.
Right.
By that point. I mean, we ended up, before my dad moved out of there, we ended up replacing the carpet and most of the flooring throughout the house. But yeah, even the kitchen was, I think when we first moved in, was that orange formica. In fact, the house we lived in before that had the orange formica and the wood beams in the ceiling, and you know, looked like some, like you could go in there and comfortably watch The Hobbit, and not even the movie, the cartoon.
Oh, nice.
Oh, okay. Or talking the last about
unicorn.
Oh, the last unicorn.
You know,
talking about all this
carpet.
The shag carpeting and the wood paneling and everything. I gotta tell you guys this story. So there's this business in town that folded up, and it had been in a building that was, I believe it was built in the 60s. And I happened to get a chance to tour this building. Down on they have the wood paneling and everything. Nothing has changed at all inside this building. Nice. But then there's this little stairway, and we go up, and this is where they would have, because it was like a tractor implement store, so it was a good-sized building, but they had the one conference room upstairs. When I walked in, I just wanted to stay there because they had chairs straight out of like late 60s, early 70s, orange vinyl, metal framed, the dark wood paneling, orange. It wasn't shag carpet, but it was that burnt orange, like what you would find in a mall shopping center. That, you know, because they didn't want, you know, cleaning everything. You don't want shag in an office building or a conference room. Everything, including the smell that come out of that room, was just pure nostalgia. And I'm just like, oh. Everyone else that was there looking at it were like, oh my gosh, this is so tacky. Oh, this needs to be updated. Oh, what is this? And I'm like, it's magic. You know? But I just cringe because I know this place is probably going to end up getting remodeled and redone and everything. And it's just like, oh, it's a time capsule. Part of me is like, hey, when they get ready to rip it apart, can I have the carpet? Can I have a chair? Can I have the paneling? Of course, I have no place to put it, but it's kind of like, if I can't save it, I will recreate it.
We have the technology.
Oh, I get you. I mean, I live just outside of Detroit. Detroit's a really old city. I love old architecture and whatnot.
Oh, yeah.
Same. When I was working downtown, I would go into buildings that were built in the 20s. You know, like the building I used to work out of, that building was completed in 1921. I mean, that was the year my grandmother was born. Going into some of these buildings, especially when you go into like the basements or some of the more unused areas, there it's been unchanged. It's magic. Yeah, it's been completely unchanged for 70, 80 years, you know? And like,
I need to get you guys to the downtown Masonic Temple because the carpet on the fifth floor is the original 1923 carpet.
Nice.
In fact, the second floor and the fifth floor have never been redone.
Oh, wow.
The second floor looks like it dropped right out of sometime around the end of the 50s to the early 60s. You guys would have, sorry.
No.
I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good. For example, who I used to work for, we owned a building in a section of downtown, oddly right next to the Detroit Masonic Temple. When we went in there, the elevator was right out of the 20s. I mean, it had what's the word I'm looking for? Like the lever. It didn't have buttons. You had to use a lever to move it up and down. You had to pull down a wooden gate for the doors to close. It was scary as hell going in this thing because it constantly got stuck. In fact, one day my guy I was working with, we went over there to move some equipment. And when we came up on the floor, one of the metal doors, you know, that open after you open up the gate came off its hinge and got stuck. So the maintenance guys had to come up and remove the door to get us out of the elevator because we were stuck in there.
So, we had the same kind of elevators in the Fort Wayne Masonic Temple. And I was the only person in the building and all the outer doors were locked. And that happened to me in one of the elevators. I had to actually climb out of the elevator, climb up the shaft of the second floor and rescue myself because nobody could get into the
spider
building.
Spider art.
Yeah. Well, the worst part about it is there was I had no cell signal in there. So I couldn't call anybody for help.
I'm just picturing Art in Spider-Man tights now and crawling up this
I wouldn't. I'm kind of chubby.
Yeah.
Well,
that's not an appealing thought. You just wrecked Dean.
Yeah, I don't want to picture you in Spider-Man in a Spider-Man outfit, dude.
I don't either. I don't want to picture me in a Spider-Man outfit.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I'm a rather large guy.
If you could go back in time to when we were kids, right, and get one thing and bring it forward from your childhood, what would it be?
Well, that's a good question.
You mean like an item, or could it be a person?
An item. One item.
An item?
From your childhood. What would it be?
Is there a limit on size?
No. One item. Not like a house, of course, but, you know, one item from your childhood.
Man, that's a tough one.
See, this is where it's weird for me, because if we're talking collectibles and everything, I've replaced almost everything except the Mego Wayne Foundation, which is a pretty rare playset. But at the same time, I stop and I think, it's like, well, there's other little... You know what? I just got it. I got the perfect one I would take. My great-grandma gave me one of those rubber Mickey Mouse figures. They were made in the 30s. I've since replaced one, but to have the actual one that she gave me would probably be the coolest thing that I could do, because I really, really regret getting rid of it. And I wish my mom had talked me out of it, but she was like, oh, well, do what you want. But I was like 12. I'm like, I want to get this. I was stupid.
If I could go back, I would. I have a couple things that I'd want. My dad used to take me in the 80s and through most of the 90s to Star Trek conventions. I actually had at one point a perfect replica of a Wah tricorder. And then I had some other items, like James Doohan had signed a ball card of, you know, him as Scotty. And there are some other sentimental items, like one of the vendors at the conventions that we used to go to, we used to see this vendor pretty regularly, had sold me that Wah tricorder and the med scanner, which I got the med scanner back. But they told me that the tricorder and the uniform shirt that I'd bought at that convention, or actually my dad bought it for me, were actually off of the show from the tricorder was from the show from the 60s, but the shirt the uniform shirt was Jonathan Frakes from The Next Generation.
Oh, wow.
And it was supposedly screen used. And it's iffy as to whether or not that was true, because the company that guy represented was a company called Starflight Enterprises. And they were the ones that got busted sometime around 1996 for sneaking into Paramount's back lots. And they were actually taking camcorders with them and filming themselves stealing stuff. So, and they were using copies of those cassettes as like COAs at conventions. No, this really came from Paramount. This is us leaving Paramount with it. You know, there's photographs of one of the guys like actually sitting in Picard's captain's chair. So, but they were also selling knockoffs, and you couldn't hardly tell the difference between the knockoffs. I mean, you never really knew what you were buying. It could actually have come from the set, or it could have been a knockoff.
Huh. Wow.
And to this day, on all of the forums, like the RPF and other forums, I've asked people about that, and they're like, yeah, we don't know. Nobody knows.
Hmm. I mean, for me, I don't know. Probably the one thing I would want, there's a couple. One of the best Christmas presents I ever received was a Millennium Falcon, a Kenner Millennium Falcon. I have one now. I'm in the process of getting it back together, but it's not my childhood original. I mean, you know, your childhood toys had nicks and dings on them where you played with them, you know. I would love that. And funny, because I was a Boy Scout, Cub Scout, Boy Scout, and if anyone was a scout, you remember, you know, the old blue and gold dinner. One year I got it in my head that I wanted to invite Harrison Ford to the blue and gold dinner. So I wrote him a letter inviting him, not thinking I'd get anything back. Well, I'll be damned, I got a autographed headshot from Temple of Doom back as kind of like a thank you, I guess. I had it for years in a folder, and then it disappeared. You know, when a move or whatever, it got lost. So one of my childhood heroes, Indiana Jones, you know, or Harrison Ford, I had his autograph, an autographed picture, and that's gone. So I'd like to get that back. I don't know. You know, just small trinkets and whatnot I had, you know, when I was a kid. Little toys that you can't find anymore, you know? Like the, you know, your parents take you to Kmart or something, and they say, pick something out. So you grab, it might not be a big name action figure like Star Wars or something. You might have got something small.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. Like, I've been talking about
the ultra rare dime store things, right? That's what you're talking about?
Right. Like, one of the things I've looked for years in collecting to find, to this day, I don't know what they're called. I know I've talked to you guys about these. I had it was a motorcycle, a black Kawasaki Ninja motorcycle with the little rider on it. And what you would do is you would lock it in. It came with a helmet. Mine was white with a black visor on it. Had a little button on the back with all the, you know, the Kawasaki stickers. You would put it inside. You would drag the whole helmet across the floor, and then you would press the button, of course, and it would launch out the rider. To this day, I don't know what these things are called. I know I got it at a Kmart when I was a kid, probably, I don't know, 84. I have researched, and I cannot find any of these things. And I would love to add this to my collection. Because, yeah, it's not a valuable toy. It's not a, you know, it's not anything huge, but I played with it a lot as a kid. And if there's one of the few toys I could grab and bring back from the 80s to now, that would be it. Because I can't find it.
Yeah, I have some things like that, too. Nothing that much detail. Mine was actually a Voltron knockoff. Beast King Go Lion, or actually it's called King of Animals. And by pure luck, a random photo showed up of one without the limbs on an eBay auction. And from there, I was able to save the image and then send it to someone. And they knew exactly what it was. And now I have like five of those. So I completely get it, because it becomes addictive. It's like my friend Greg that I met through a Stomper group. He ended up having this childhood, it's like a Japanese robot knockoff, that Thunder Tom. You just don't find them. The value, I don't know what the value is. I had a toy expert tell me it's probably about $150 to $200 in the condition that it's in, missing parts. So we worked out a trade. But seeing that, I didn't have that toy, but it was so nostalgic to me of those dime stores, those knockoff toys that were there back in the day, but they're long gone now, and you don't have any information. I've searched Google and everything for more information on it, and it's such limited stuff. And this is something that is actually seen and known by some collectors, where your little ninja motorcycle, I completely get it. The quest for the toy that you can't find any information on is it's fun to look, but it's frustrating that you can't find.
Right, and it can be maddening, too, because you mentioned that motorcycle. I found ones very similar, and I swear I scoured the internet, and I found one picture. One. And it's not the same one I had, but it's the closest thing I've ever found, and I can't find any other information except for this one picture.
Right.
And I've been looking for years.
That actually kind of happened with me with actually a couple different items. Tomy made a Tron handheld game around 1982, and my grandmother had bought one for one of my cousin and I. She bought us each one for Christmas one year. There, that item, for years, like, nobody had ever seen one since. There was that. There was the original Transformers walkie-talkies that the Radio Shack sold, which I've only ever seen an identical set to the ones that I had, like, once or twice. And the Knight Rider whip shifter, or wrist shifter.
Yep, I remember
that. I've posted pictures, I don't know how many times, of that. Yeah, there was, the Dukes of Hazzard wristwatch launchers.
Yep. Oh, yes. I had one of those.
The little wind-up ones.
Yep.
I got those for Easter one year, which is an odd thing to find in your Easter basket. But then, like, a following year, I got Wheeljack and Skeletor.
Well, it's been an interesting walk down memory lane. What was the one defining moment that separated you from everyone else? I'm a geek and I'm proud of it. And fuck everyone else.
Well, for me, what happened, like I mentioned earlier, I had started collecting baseball cards, and it wasn't so much, I'm not a sports fan. I just like the idea of collecting something. Christmas, 1990, my sister gives me a gift of 3 VHS tapes, which is the original Star Wars trilogy. Nice. And it's about that time is when I had seen Star Wars, the first one, before, but that's the first time I was able to, like, really sit down and watch and comprehend the whole thing. And that moment is when I realized that I wanted to get action figures that I had sold at yard sales of Star Wars. And it was almost instantaneous. It's like sports cards or these baseball cards. Bye. I'm done with you. I never really liked you in the first place, which is not true. I liked them. But all of a sudden, my entire life changed. 30 years ago, I started going to flea markets, and it's become my passion ever since. I was just barely 14, obsessed with finding these action figures. And it was right about that time that I didn't care that other people weren't like me. I'm like, I'm having fun. This is something that I enjoy doing. It gives me an outlet. I didn't have to deal with real world crap. I hated school. I hated people. Well, but I loved my hobby. So that was that right there was probably the defining moment that I realized I'm going to be who I am.
Yeah, for me, it was probably becoming friends with Robert Eichmann as a kid. Because before that, I'd gone through like kindergarten and first grade and nursery school with a lot of these jerk ass kids at Lutheran schools. Suddenly I had a friend that was just like me. You know, I was like, fuck it. You know, I actually didn't care at that point if we were the outcast kids, because I wasn't alone anymore.
Right.
You know, people made fun of us. So what? You know, we did our thing, and we were inseparable. I mean, until his parents moved, as his dad got relocated, we were inseparable.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if I could say if there's any one moment like that. Probably when I in high school, like I said, I was picked on as a kid. And when I got to high school, my attitude was, you know what? I like what I like. If you don't like it, fuck you. And when I hooked up with, you know, my close circle of friends, like I said, we were all gamers. We all played RPGs. And when I realized that these guys are into the same things I am, Star Wars, you know, not necessarily toys, out of my core group of friends, I'm like the only one that collects toys, but they were geeks and we didn't care. I mean, we could be sitting around at lunch in high school planning out, you know, what we were going to do for that weekend's gaming campaign, And people would kind of look at us and snicker, but we didn't care. It was kind of like at that moment, you know, I'm a geek, and if you don't like it, screw you.
See, by high school, I was trying to make geekery kind of integrated into everything I did and make it cool. You know, like my clothes and things. I bought my own clothes by then. Like, I would go buy, I'd go to, like, Old Navy or someplace or The Gap. I'd go buy, like, a gray collarless sweater and then wear, like, a red turtleneck underneath of it. And black pants to school. And I would wear, like, khakis to school with, like, a black, like, Sequest t-shirt underneath of it.
Nice.
You know, khaki shirt, like I just stepped out of the Navy. Yeah, I mean, I'd wear, like, a black leather. I mean, I tried to integrate. I even went to a local tailor shop and had, like, collars taken off my shirts and stuff. like I just stepped out of the 23rd century.
Nice.
So I tried to, like, integrate it and set myself apart. I mean, I was still pretty much, you know, clean cut, but my clothes were different than everybody else's. And I didn't give a shit. I had a car, you know, I had a license and I had a job and I was doing my own thing.
Right. I mean, hell, in high school, I was usually wearing, you know, Depeche Mode t-shirt with a leather jacket, you know, ripped up jeans and t-shirt and sneakers, you know? So yeah, I was a geek, but I didn't necessarily, I don't want to say I didn't let it fly. I mean, if you knew, I didn't, like I said, I am who I am. If you don't like it, fuck you.
Yeah. Me in high school, I grew up small town, Oregon, very much rednecks and all over the place, rednecks and more of the grunge. I pretty much wore my jeans and t-shirts, still dressed the same for the most part. I sound like a country song. I still comb my hair the same. You know, I just haven't really. I wore a baseball cap. It's just what I never, you know, given I wear more geeky t-shirts now than what I did then because they're more available. You couldn't find all the cool Marvel characters on t-shirts back in the 90s like you do now, unless right. You were a 5-year-old. So I had Trailblazer shirts, you know, everything. It's like, oh, I like basketball, like, 3 years prior, so my sister would buy me Trailblazer t-shirts for Christmas and birthday. I'm like, oh, thanks, another Clyde Drexler. Love Clyde the Glide, awesome guy. But when your wardrobe consists of Trailblazers and Clyde Drexler only t-shirts, you know, you just kind of, yeah.
You know, it's funny you mentioned t-shirts. One of the things I quote-unquote collect is geeky t-shirts. In fact, my goal is to be able to wear a different shirt every day of the year and never wear the same shirt twice. And I'm slowly getting there. I think I'm up to like 60 something. Anything else you guys want to add?
Well, I just happen to think we're all friends with Michael French, and yep. You talked about how he got you started. I still remember a post on the Rebel Scum, not Rebel Scum, you know, sorry.
Yes, yeah.
Just to make sure that's clear, because it's one of those things that I've, yeah.
What's funny is that everybody's always worried that I'm going to make comments like that.
Well, I only made it because there's been times that I've had it come up, and like back in the day, I had my search history and I had my niece was looking. She's like, "What are you looking at?" I'm like, "What do you mean?" It's like, "Rebel cum? Rebels cum?" I'm like, "No, rebel scum. That's what they call the people on Star Wars. You rebel scum." Oh, so yeah, I just, like, everyone thought I was looking at porn. I'm like, thanks. That's
Star
what
Wars
happens.
Porn.
Ooh, look at that droid. Actually, you know, R2-D2 did kind of have a thing for outlets and walls, but yeah, back to Michael. Sorry, distracted there. I blame Art. He's corrupted my mind.
You're welcome.
His post about, and he had like the Thundercats video and then the Jedi action figures with the sticks. It was so weird because I was like, whoa, this guy isn't just into Star Wars. He likes this other toy line and he loves this toy line. And so I reached out and like, hi, I like your post. I was like that creepy little kid, you know, in A Christmas Story. I like the Wizard of Oz. I like the Tin. That's what I felt like I was probably doing to poor Michael. But then all of a sudden, you know, he's like, "Way!" And we became friends. And his attitude, his enjoyment of the hobby and retro blasting has caused me to branch out into so many different areas of collecting on top of what I already had a passion for. It's the dude is like a treasure to the pop culture community. So I just wanted to say that. Sorry. Brown nosing, I know, but.
Yeah, see, I started talking to him because I had uncrated a bunch of my old Star Trek ships from the Playmates line. And my oldest daughter was really into them because we were playing Star Trek Online. And I was looking for repro decals or ways to clean them up. And I don't think he'd done the Retro Bright video yet. But we got talking about like Dick Tracy stuff and tons of other stuff. And that actually kind of also led me into, ironically, Michael French is part of how I ended up getting into 3D printing. Huh. Oddly enough, it was because I couldn't find some of the parts that I needed to replace for some of my old collectibles. And so I was looking at, well, okay, how do I make them myself? If I can't buy them, I'm going to have to make them. And I was thinking, well, this could turn into a good object lesson for my kids. And it kind of snowballed from there.
Okay.
Which, by the way, that's also kind of how I ended up buying a freeze dryer. But, you know, it was either build one, teach my kids how to build one, or for the same amount of money, go buy one because they wanted to learn how to make astronaut ice cream.
Okay. You brought up Michael. He's one of the nicest guys I've ever met.
Oh, absolutely.
For example, a couple years ago for Christmas, my ex got me a vintage X-Wing. I'd never had one as a kid. But when, you know, we ordered it, you know, I wrapped Christmas morning, and it's in great shape. But when I started taking it apart, the guy who owned it previous had ripped out all of the electronics out of the inside. All the wiring and everything was gone, so I had a shell. And I was just chatting with Michael about it, and he says, you know, I have an extra one. Let me send this to you so you can get it up and running. And, you know, I didn't ask for it. He just offered because he had it and he knew I could use it.
His generosity was something, though, that really attracted me to the channel was them restoring, I think it was an R5.
Yep.
A childhood R5 for somebody. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to do whatever I can to support him and his channel. I mean, that was just amazingly kind.
Right. He will bend over backwards for people. And it's sad because some people on different communities, they give him shit for his opinion. And, you know, fuck him. He's one of the most stand-up guys I've ever met. Even if I don't agree with him, I'll back him. You know what I mean? Because he's such a good guy.
Yeah. And, you know, when I sit there and I see these people like attack him and burn, we're trying to, you know, 99% of the time it's out of pure jealousy.
Well, I agree.
I get the same issues every once in a while on a very, very mild scale because my collection is nowhere near as impressive and extensive as Retroblasting. But I have a fairly good sized collection and I'll post something that it's pretty desirable that I've managed to get over the years. And then all of a sudden, all I get is just negativity, attitude. And it's just like, really? Really, people? We're on a group. We're adults, and you're throwing a fit, and you're attacking me because I actually added something to my collection that obviously you must want. Or I don't know. It's just people suck.
Yeah, they do.
And it's in like every franchise. There's always that like one or two asshole people, although I might be on that list because I've thrown some hate lately on the new Spangler wands and the spirit packs. But
yeah, but I mean, no one deserves I look at it this way. We all do this because it's fun, right? And if you have a contrarian opinion, which the three of us do have, we have contrarian opinions about different things. No one deserves that kind of hate for collecting toys or these gatekeeper fuckers that, oh, if you don't like, for example, I don't care for the new Star Wars movies. I don't. They suck. My God, if you were to put your opinion online, you're going to get, you know, 50, they're going to put your, you know, kiss the gunner's daughter. They're going to put you over a cannon and whip you because you have because you don't like the new Disney shit. Well, guess what, fuckers? I don't like it. If you like it, great. I don't.
Way do you hate on the newer Ghostbusters movie?
Oh, the
2016 one or the new one that nobody's seen yet.
I have hope for that movie. But anyways, how do you get here? Let's wrap this up. So we're all geeks. We're all proud of it. And I wouldn't change who I am for anyone else. You guys?
Nope.
No, I might want to, I want to lose a little bit of weight, but now other than that, no, I don't want to change at all. If you're geeky and you know it, clap your hands. Sorry.
Sorry, for whatever reason, I was hoping he was going to say, if you're geeky and you know it, spread the clap.
Yeah, okay. Nope. That's, see, people, that's what I'm talking about. I don't mean to be creepy or perverted, but you talk to Art, all of a sudden you start doing it.
It spreads like the clap.
Well, on that note, thanks for listening, everyone, and we hope to catch you on the next one. The next one should be our Blue Thunder is next, correct, guys?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep,
yeah.
We're going to be doing a review on Blue Thunder.
I'm so going to be watching it later today.
There you go. So I hope everyone enjoyed this podcast, and catch you later, guys.